Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. You have no doubt heard about the flap at Google over a controversial memo on diversity written by a 28-year-old staffer. He attempted to explain the gender gap in the tech industry by suggesting it's the result of biological differences. Among other things, he says women are more prone to stress and anxiety. No one's denying there's a gap, but this young man's public rationale cost him his job. We thought we'd get the take of some women in the tech field here in St. Louis. I spoke yesterday with Crystal Martin. She's with LaunchCode and directs its Coder Girl program. It helps women get into the tech field. LaunchCode helps companies find skilled tech talent. Haley Schiff is LaunchCode's Education Operations Director. Tamara Usher is with Slalom, a Clayton technology firm. And I asked Crystal about that Google memo.
I mean, it's really upsetting to hear. I think as a woman in tech and as somebody that supports a lot of women in tech, and you hear all these stories and you think that with this, with there being so much awareness around the issues that have been happening at different companies in Silicon Valley, even locally, you would think that someone would just not do that again, right? Like they would have enough sense to know that this conversation is happening. And I felt like the day it came out, I felt like personally hurt. I don't know. I had a really visceral reaction to it because I feel like I have to protect myself from that sometimes. And then as a leader of Coder Girl, I feel like I have to protect the women from those types of comments and experiences.
But isn't it a fact that there are fewer women in the field, far fewer women than men?
Absolutely. There are fewer women in the tech field, but I don't think I know it's not because of a level of natural ability, right? It's because of our society and how we view what jobs are right for women and what jobs are not right for women.
Haley, go ahead.
Yeah, one thing. So LaunchCode is an organization that helps people from non-traditional backgrounds get jobs in tech. And one of our programs is Coder Girl, which is a learning and job support program specifically for women. And we found that, you know, after educating thousands of students, that women score comparably to men on aptitude tests that we give them for admission. And yet, you know, apply to the programs in much smaller numbers and get placed in apprenticeships in much smaller numbers. So we've realized over the course of time that it's not about the aptitude, but it's about the support and the environment and the messaging that we give to women that makes it seem like it's not a place for them. And that's what Coder Girl is really kind of trying to turn that message on its head.
We'll talk about that in a little more detail a little bit later as to exactly how it works. But let me turn to Tamara now. You've been in the business, in the field, I should say, for 20 years, dare I say 20 years?
20 years, yeah. It is, yes.
Well, what have you noticed with regard to the so-called gender gap in the field?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely closing. In the years that I've been in the field, when I started in the late 90s, it was very much, fewer women involved. But as that is continuing to grow, and I think what we're continuing to see is that the products and the services offered from technology are also improving largely because of that diversity. And there's a lot of evidence that shows that the more women that you have on the team and the more diverse your team is, the better the outcome in your product and in your service.
What do you think the reason is that there are fewer women in the field than men?
I think it starts really early with younger girls, a bit, discouraged that girls are taught to be, beautiful and perfect and not taught to take risks and go out on the playground and fall down and just go for it. And so, sort of in that middle school time frame when, kids are developing and, men start to or boys start to take a liking to science and math, women, usually are starting to get involved with other things and doubt themselves and their ability. And I think with things like this memo coming out, it's affirming that this attitude is out there and we need to make sure to make everyone know that this is not really the popular opinion and that you should not let that doubt increase.
Haley, do you buy that? All of what Tamara just said?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think, the way we message tech and tech careers for men against women starts at a very early age. It starts in middle school. It starts in high school. It starts in the number of female computer science majors at university and the retention of women that go on with their studies at every juncture. Mm.
Crystal, what's your thought on that? One of the things that you hear is that early on, women do not find themselves attracted to the STEM disciplines, and that that probably has something to do with what we're talking about here today. Does that sound right to you?
Oh, it does. I mean, before I became, you know, involved with Launch Code and Coder Girl, I was a middle school math teacher. Uh-huh. And there was always this mindset of, or many of the girls had this mindset, especially coming into middle school, because I was sixth grade, so like the first year of it, that, oh, I'm just not good at math. And it was just like, how did you hear that? Like, where did you, how do you think at 11 years old you're not good at math already? Mm-hmm. That seems impossible. So yeah, I just feel like women get those messages early on. People, adults in their life, just tell them they can't do things, and then that gets imprinted, and they all their actions are aligned with that idea without even knowing they could be good at it. And I mean, I have seen it personally myself. When I was exposed to science disciplines, that was the stuff that I got really excited about. But then you get the messaging from your peers and from people around you like, well, what about the art program? Or what about this other thing that you're really artistic? You really enjoy fashion. Like, why don't you pursue that other than, you know, this field or this discipline?
What about the notion, Haley, as this memo has indicated, that women are biologically unsuited for this field? I see a three big smiles right here, and I think you're going to throw something at me for even saying it.
Oh, that was a killer.
No, I think it's ridiculous, and I think it's generally unfounded, and I think it's not your biological makeup that makes you good at a particular science math. It's like saying that men aren't good at art because they're mm-hmm. biologically, you know, not made for that. I think one interesting thing, too, is, you know, some of the earliest breakthroughs in computer technology were made by women. And in, like, the early 1980s, the field was, like, 37% female. And that's actually decreased to the point where it's now about 18% women. Mm-hmm. And you can see over time the way in which, you know, computer and education has been really focused more towards men that's contributed to that decline.
Mm-hmm. Tamara, what drew you to the field? I mean, mm-hmm. you got into it when it was really at a relatively early stage, comparatively speaking, given what's gone on in the last 10 years.
Yes, definitely. I mean, technology was always exciting to me, you know, even as a kid on my Commodore 64 programming BASIC and those kind of things. So I was drawn to it and science from a young age, and my parents encouraged me to get involved. And, you know, like any student in college, you know, changed my major a few times, wasn't quite sure what to do, and found technology when it became a part of the School of Business. So the management of information systems back then was a draw for me because I was interested in business and interested in the way that technology can transform our lives through communication and business. And, you know, at that time, you know, the internet was really starting to take off. And so I started to become a web developer, and I was really excited about having that voice.
What has the workplace environment been like for you with your male colleagues?
You know, I have found it pretty favorable. I definitely see that there's a good deal of competition that is created with, like, kind of the good old boys network and those kind of things. And this is prevalent in other industries, too. But I think that I was somewhat welcomed in my experience. You know, I've fought a little bit to go after different positions and things like that, but I feel like I was welcomed and you know, enjoyed being the minority until I, you know, noticed that it was time for me to no longer be the minority, that as more women were coming in and working with me, that we were doing better work.
You sort of conditioned everything there. You said it's pretty favorable and almost welcome. You're not quite there yet, are you?
You know, I think that the way that women compete in the workforce is just different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the differences between men and women, while there are differences between every individual, and those have to be honored and recognized. And I think that that is where the opportunity lies to find those differences and to play those strengths to the better of the end result.
Haley, what's the workplace environment been like for you?
I think, you know, it's been overall pretty favorable.
There you go again. It's not quite there. Pretty favorable. Not great. Pretty favorable.
You know, I mean, I think any woman will tell you this, that, you know, it can be challenging to be the only woman in the room time and time again. You mm-hmm. notice it and you're aware of it. That being said, I don't think it's an impossible circumstance to navigate. And you know, programs that get more women in the workplace are, you know, only continue to make those environments better for women overall.
And, Crystal, go ahead.
Yeah, and while women experience, some women experience really flagrant discrimination and abuse in a workplace, I think what often happens is you become conditioned to the cuts, what is it, a death by a thousand cuts, right? It's not just one situation. It's just the small undermining of your ideas, the reiteration by the male in the room about what you just said. Sometimes the blatant, like, taking of ideas as their own and not giving credit to the woman who actually came up with them. So while I think that I've done a good job of navigating those situations, again, that happens in all industries, but in particularly in tech, people think, because you are a woman, and from in my case, because I'm Black, there's just no way you can be the expert in the room. You can't be the person that can speak to this. So I think it's just, I think that happens a lot, and I think I've been able to navigate through it, but it doesn't, though it doesn't happen on a daily basis where you always feel threatened, it definitely happens in these little undertones of discrimination and that you just have to kind of, like, you know, work around.
The New York Times has actually done some heavy reporting on this, the fact that women in the field are subject, as in many cases, to sexual abuse in the workplace. Is that something that you've confronted?
That's not something that I've ever confronted personally, but I think all of these things, and what Crystal's probably trying to get at too, is there's all these, you know, small little things that do happen to women, you know, and it happens with fair regularity, especially in the tech industry. And, you know, the sort of death by a thousand cuts phenomenon, that the reason that we don't see more women in technical fields just across the board has to do with a lot of these underlying elements that, you know, aren't necessarily, it's not easy to measure it, you know, in a survey or something like that, where, or it's not easy to measure with just straight demographic data, that it's a lot of the narrative experiences of what makes working in tech as a minority challenging that really starts to drive people away.
Yeah, they talk about these different milestones in the field where women actually just leave, right? They find other fields to work in because they just don't want to deal with it anymore. I think I've heard 4 years, 10 years, where women just exit the field altogether.
Yeah, I think you become conditioned to it a bit. It doesn't seem as absurd until you spin it around, you know, because I think that even we as women also have these biases. So we don't notice it as much. And then when things happen, like I was working with a bakery that had, you know, colors of pink and purple, and they had hired two men to come and work in an intern program. And they were like, well, are they going to be concerned that these colors are everywhere and they're not going to feel comfortable working here because it's so pink and purple? And you would never think of the flip side of that. You would never go work somewhere and be like, this room is really like black and gray and it's just so bro, I don't feel comfortable here. So I think that we also have these biases as well, and just being aware of them is the first step. But that's why sometimes when you're working in the field, you don't actually notice these things that happen, but they are there.
We've got to take a break. Let's do that now. We'll come back and continue our conversation. We are talking about women in the tech workplace, if you will, the fact that maybe there aren't as many as there should be, and there has been some discussion about that thanks to a memo that was produced by a worker at Google just a few days ago, who said that women are not biologically suited for that particular kind of work. We'll come back and continue the conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Welcome back as we continue our conversation about women in the tech force, workforce, if you will. It's the result of a memo that was distributed at Google by a young technician there who felt that women were not biologically suited for that line of work. As a matter of fact, the number of women, or the percentage of women, I should say, who are involved in the tech field is low. Do we know, ladies, what the percentage is? Have you seen a percentage? Around 30%, something
30,
like that.
Yeah. Around 30%.
I should point out that we're talking in this conversation with Crystal Martin, the Coder Girl Program Director at LaunchCode. Haley Schaff is Education Operations Director at LaunchCode. And Tamara Usher is with Slalom, a technology consulting firm. It has offices in Clayton. You know, when I listen to you talk and about what's going on in your particular field, it makes me think, well, the same thing is probably going on everywhere. I mean, you've kind of alluded to that, but why would your field be set apart if this is kind of what goes on in the workplace generally? Crystal?
Well, I think it's just that I really think it's that belief that women are not suited for this work, right? Because we've been excluded from these types of jobs. And I think there's been a discussion about once there was money to be had and there was status to be had in being a software developer as a man, then women got pushed out of that workforce and it became men's work, right? But there was once upon a time where Haley alluded to, it was women's work.
Haley?
Yeah, that there's there's evidence that the number of computer science graduates that are women has like sharply decreased over the last 30 years, and that really like a lot of what was the movie that just came out recently about the women that worked on like at NASA and
Hidden Figures.
You know, there's like a lot of really really crucial fundamental work that was done at the base of developing a lot of science and technology concepts, and especially around computing, has kind of been shoved under the rug, and it's very much been masculinized, for lack of a better word. But, there was a lot of really important early contributions done by women. Mm-hmm.
But don't you think that if you were in another field, you'd be running across much of the same kind of thing?
I think potentially yes, but I think that tech being so new and the gender bias being so distinct sometimes amplifies these issues in a way that's not quite as present in other industries.
Tamer, thoughts?
Yeah, I think that, as a lot more digital becomes prevalent in our everyday lives, that there's a lot of, power and money and opportunity around these fields and around automation and the way these things are going where, yes, it's prevalent in other fields, but it's maybe not as impactful or worth fighting for, or it starts to just sort of level out the discussion. And because this field is one very much of the future and is going to shape the future, there's a lot at stake. And so I think that everybody wants to be a part of it and everybody wants to control that. But I think the interesting part is that, while this is happening, there's also, women that are making a majority of the purchasing positions for their households and, making a lot of decisions even related to technology. Mm-hmm. And so, creating products and services that cater towards them is going to be very important.
What do you make of the fact that women have achieved fairly prominent positions in the tech field? I think of Yahoo and I think of Facebook and some of the other major corporations which have been run or have women executives at the very highest level. Does this kind of belie what we're talking about?
Well, I think that there's been a lot of great work with people that are advocates for women and, are making, a point of, having this conversation like we are here, which is helping that. The other thing to note, so at Slalom, we measure the number of women that we have in our workforce, but also the number of women in leadership, as well as the number of women in truly deep technical work. So work that's more around development or architecture as opposed to communications and project management. So there is still some way to go, but there's a lot of people fighting.
Yeah, you've got to be encouraged at least somewhat by the fact that there is this elevation of women has been in recent years.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's encouraging. I think there's a lot of energy around recognizing this as an issue of importance. And I think in the same way that because tech is growing so fast, that also creates opportunities to, move the needle and push things forward and make it different and make more space.
I want to just read some of the points that were made in the memo, and I'll start with you, Kristen, on this. You are familiar with it. Tamer, I'm a little surprised that you weren't all that familiar with the Google memo, but we'll get back to that in a moment. But you will be before this this program is over.
No doubt.
Okay, these are just a couple of things, Crystal. I'm not sure how he pronounces his name. It's D-A-M-O-R-S, Damore or something like that. Anyway, he's out of work, by the way. We should point that out as a result of this memo. One of the things he points to, he says, women are more gregarious than assertive. Women are biologically prone to stress and anxiety. Women look for more work-life balance. And I've already mentioned a couple of times, therefore not biologically suited for work in this field. you're just shaking your head.
How you can draw those conclusions makes no sense to me. And the funny thing is, like, I feel like you hear a lot of studies come out saying that people are just asking for more work-life balance. just period, not women. But the idea that we are more neurotic or that we are more gregarious than aggressive. I'm gregarious and aggressive, right? Like, I know how to relate to people and talk, but I also know how to push for things that I think are right and are good for me. So just the fact that he made those statements as if that was a blanket statement. And there are some people who are assertive, right? And there are some people who are aggressive. To boil that down to women is just you think someone who's been able to get to Google and be an engineer would be smart enough not to try to draw those conclusions and think they make sense, because they don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's only 28 years old, which means that, you know, it doesn't have that much mileage. And he got most of his information, from what I understand, from Wikipedia.
Oh, my.
Haley, is that a good source for stuff like this?
I mean, Wikipedia is open access and editable by anyone at any time, so it's not really a great source of definitive information.
You'd be happy to know, too, that a number of serious studies do not back up his conclusions. So that is important to note. Tamara, back to you. Now you know a little bit more about that memo. What's your take on what he's been saying?
Yeah, I think that it comes down to individuals, and this comes down to that, you know, standard around emotions, I think, is a lot of what is at play here, and that, you know, there are emotions that women have, there are emotions that men have, they're, you know, show themselves in the workplace in a variety of ways, and, you know, your emotional intelligence is something that, you know, really everybody in a workplace is usually working on. The work-life balance situation is very much shifting. So, for instance, my husband was a stay-at-home dad, and I worked. And he, you know, ran around with a whole group of stay-at-home dads, and that is very much becoming more popular. So, you know, work-life balance and these gender roles are shifting, and that's very much acceptable. And, you know, to pin an individual into, you know, one set of expected outcomes or, you know, ways of being is preposterous. That's the only word I can think.
Haley, another of the criticisms in the memo dealt with the diversity programs. Are there, to your knowledge, enough programs dealing with diversity issues, do you think, in the field that would be? You're shaking your head no already before I finish it. There aren't enough, you're saying.
I think there are not enough programs that directly target diversity in tech, and particularly around concentrated outcomes of actually getting more people in technical fields. I think there's support groups and networks inside a lot of companies, and these are conversations that are being had. But in terms of targeted programs that are really, you know, sending the message to people from diverse backgrounds that these jobs are for you, these opportunities are for you, and here's how you get there. There's not enough pathways like that.
And Crystal, in your particular case, being African-American, it's kind of a double-barreled situation, mm-hmm. too, because it's not only the gender issue, it's also the racial issue. Is there enough going on, do you think, in your field in that regard?
I think there are, like Haley said, there are a lot of support programs, but I think we need to be pushing ourselves, and I include Coder Girl and Launch Code in this, and like, what are we really doing to move the needle, right? So, like I always say, especially, you know, with St. Louis companies, I think we're very good at hiring and attracting, you know, diverse talent, but are you good at paying attention to them? Are you good at grooming them? Any CEO you meet in the city or anywhere else, they had someone who prepared them for that leadership position. So great that you hire people of color, great that you hire women, but are you intentionally thinking about, as a leader and as an employer, how am I going to develop and groom this person to get to the next level, where they take my seat at the end of the day? I think that's the thing that all of our programs are missing. We're getting in the first step, but what does it mean to give people a pathway to the same types of roles and opportunities for advancement? And not only advancement, when people are in leadership positions, they have the ability to affect change across a company, across a community, and then to individuals. So getting more diverse people in these positions of influence does just that. They're able to influence a number of arenas in our society to give access and opportunity to different people, to everybody.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking primarily about gender, but while we're at this point in the discussion, let's talk about racial representation in the field. What is that like? Is there a significant percentage of people in the field from minority communities?
Well, when you look at the numbers at the companies, you know, in Silicon Valley and even here, the numbers are very, very low. I would say 10% and lower. And I think when I think of minorities in tech or people who are truly underrepresented, I think of Black and Latino people. those are the most underrepresented people, I would say, from what I've been able to understand in the field. And that is really just, it's upsetting. And I think there's a mindset that people from different backgrounds who do have that training just couldn't be as qualified as, you know, the white kid that went to MIT. I mean, there's been a lot of conversation about, there are black engineers who are graduating from excellent HBCUs. Why aren't they getting the same jobs that people with the same qualifications are getting elsewhere?
Mm-hmm. Haley, thoughts on that part of it? What do you see? What do you observe?
Yeah, I think it's a very real challenge, and I think it's something that we continue to see throughout our programs at LaunchCode, is that it really requires, you know, intentional grooming of people, and it really requires intentional recruitment and support programs to ensure that people feel comfortable and like they have a space in these jobs, and like they have a space to demand a seat at the table, and like they have a space to, you know, further their skills. And that's something we're trying to continually improve at doing.
Tamara, you've been in, again, we've pointed out, you've been in the field for 20 years. What have you seen with regard to minority representation? Have you seen any real growth in that area?
You know, I have not seen as much growth in that area as I have seen with women. And I think, you know, just like with women, the advocacy of leadership is really important. So all the leaders, you know, have an obligation to be advocates for diversity and be advocates for grooming those individuals and giving opportunity.
Yeah. Let's get to the nitty-gritty on this, and I'll start with you, Tamara. Okay, so what do women bring to the table in the field? What do they bring to the table that maybe men don't?
Well, one thing that's very important is empathy. You know, these products and services require a user interface, for instance, a technical approach that is thinking about the human. And I think that women, maybe some of them being naturally inclined to be more empathetic, men can be too as well, but they can definitely bring that point of view.
Haley? Your thoughts? What do you bring to the table?
I think consensus-based leadership. There's actually studies that have been shown that women, you know, are better at creating consensus and getting buy-in from a group of people. And I think especially in software development, it's all moving in the direction of like agile team-based development, where you're working with a number of other people and you're all contributing to the same project. And so the ability to draw people together, build consensus, I think those are really valuable skills that women often excel at.
One of the things pointed out in the memo, by the way, that we've been talking about in Google is that women are more interested in people than in things. So that's not a bad thing.
And yeah, well, but and technology is all for people. So
right.
being interested in people is, you know, a really important hallmark of making good technology.
Okay, so we'll take that comment, right, for what it's worth. Crystal, to you, what do you bring to the table? What, as a female, do you bring to the table?
I think we bring perseverance, right? The fact that a woman gets to the door of a tech job means she had to endure a lot of self-doubt and a lot of people questioning her decision to do that. And I think what all the women at this table got to is multitasking, right? We are able to take in tons of information at one time and understand how that's going to affect how we build a product, right? We're looking at how, you know, the customer feels about the product they're building and the relationship that they have with their idea. We're looking at the team that has to build this and saying, like, they have needs and they have ideas and input on how to build this product. You know, I am the person in the middle, you know, or I have assigned myself to be the person that, you know, tries to mitigate and understand what everybody needs and what everybody can contribute to making something good. And I think we do that kind of thing in our daily lives with our families, with children, with friends, with our partners. We try to figure out what are all the things that are going to affect this technical process. But we all know that programming is not just, you know, a technical process. It's dealing with people and ideas and egos and things that people feel very passionate and close to.
So you think you're better at that than men?
I do. No. I think society lends us the opportunity, I'll put it that way, to learn how to be better at it, right? Because we're always put in the intersection of trying to figure out how to make everything work for everyone. So I don't know if women are much better at it than men because we are born that way. But I think the experiences that we have in the situation we get put in help us flex that muscle to be good at it.
Tamara, do you think that men are threatened by women in the tech workplace?
Well, I think they should be. No, I think that we're humans at the end of the day. And, you know, like I said before, diversity is going to make everything better. So, you know, I think if men are wanting to control an industry and, you know, not let us in or let diversity in, then, yeah, they should feel threatened because it's going to end up better if we're here.
Haley, what do you think?
I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of jobs growing in tech, and I would like to see more women filling those jobs. I don't think that's necessarily like a threat or a zero-sum game. I just think it's the way the world's moving.
Well, let's talk a little about what LaunchCode is doing. Chris, I'll come back to you on this. Because that is precisely what Coder Girls is all about, is to really try to attract more young women or women in general into the field. Tell us about that. How does that work, and how are you doing that?
Yeah, so Coder Girl is an education program of LaunchCode, and we have a year-long program where women can engage in a number of learning opportunities in a different area of tech. And the idea is not just to attract women, but to develop the talent and interest that is already there. I think people sometimes think that Coder Girl is like going out for the masses and saying, women, this is for you. I think the women that come to our doors have already identified that they have the ability to take on something like programming. And this is just like a place where they know that they can make it happen, right? Because it's a support network of other women who want to do it. And then there's mentors who are professionals in the field. And then it's just like the broader network of tech that I think that's what attracts people to it.
Well, are they being attracted? Are you bringing women
in? Oh, we definitely are. I mean, we have had a huge response in our last two cohorts. I mean, over 800 applications the first time for 150 slots, over 500 this last time for 150 slots. So we have a ton of interest in the program.
Well, Haley, there's a gentleman in this building who is a part of the program now, and I talked to him about it this morning. He said very few women are part of his cohort, if you will.
Yeah, well, so we have a number of different education offerings at LaunchCode. So we have our LC101 program, which is a 20-week program designed to get someone coding skills. And we have a more immersive full-time program. And part of the genesis behind building Coder Girl into a structured, you know, six-month education program was realizing that we're not attracting women, people of color, people from more diverse backgrounds to our programs in the way that we should. And when we do attract them, they often drop out at higher rates than their white male peers. So building Coder Girl into a space where women can learn with other women and gain these skills, we found has better long-term outcomes.
Well, maybe we'll have more now that this program is on the air and folks are listening to it. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you all so much for being with us. It's been a fascinating discussion. Mm-hmm. And you're certainly great representatives of your field. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks to Crystal Martin, Coder Girl Program Director with LaunchCode. Haley Sheff, Education Operations Director at LaunchCode, and Tamara Usher is with Slalom, a technology consulting firm with offices in Clayton.